Welcome to another episode of Connecting with Careers, the show where we connect you to the resources to make your next career move. I'm your host, Clayton Lawrence. If you're new to the show, I sit down with the brightest professionals from different industries to learn about what they do, why they do it, and how they reach their career goals. You know, speaking of career goals, I want to see you get your dream job. So if you need any help with your resume, interview skills, or job search strategies, check the show notes for a link to my company, Pipeline Career Services. Now, I know you're here to get some great advice, so let me introduce today's guest. Today, we are connecting with Rochelle Still, a University of Georgia graduate and the membership manager of Upcycled Food Association. Today, she'll be telling us about the food and sustainability industry, how we can reduce our waste, and how she found her footing here during a pandemic. I'm excited for what Rochelle has to say, so let's get right into it. Welcome to the show, Rochelle.
Thanks for having me, Clayton. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. I've never really known too much about sustainability. I've heard the term before. So I guess like before we, you know, get too deep into like what exactly you do day to day, let's talk about like what sustainability is. Because when I hear that term, I think of like recycling and, you know, not littering. So is that what it means?
That's definitely a part of it. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's such a big term now. It's something that people talk about and apply to so many different things, as it should be. But, you know, sustainability essentially is doing things in a way that are sustainable and things that are healthy. And, you know, a lot of the times in the way that, you know, it applies to what I do is in terms of our environment, right? So how are the things that we're doing in our businesses and our work and just in our daily lives, how are they contributing to a more sustainable and healthy environment and earth that will be able to sustain itself for years to come, right? So making sure that the practices and the way that we're living our lives is helping to contribute to a longer, you know, lifespan of Mother Earth rather than, you know, deducting from that and hurting the planet essentially. So sustainable practices kind of goes into that, you know, creating a healthier world that can sustain for a longer period of time.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, we want the earth to be nice and healthy.
We do.
Yeah. If the earth is not healthy, then, you know, we're not healthy. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's super important.
And it's really interesting how I feel like over the past, you know, maybe decade or so, especially sustainability has really kind of come into its own and started to touch all sorts of different industries, right? You know, I work in the food industry, so you hear about sustainability there a lot. But it's in the fashion industry now, you know, even in technology, they're coming up with technology solutions related to sustainability. And it really touches a little bit of everything. And I think a lot of people are getting a lot more exposure to that now and ways to be sustainable in their own lives and their businesses and their work. So it's definitely, it's a growing, I don't want to call it a trend, you know, even though it kind of is trendy, but yeah, it's definitely a hot topic these days, which is good to hear, you know, it should be.
Yeah. Have you ever heard any, I guess, like misconceptions about like what sustainability is?
You know, I think sometimes people think that, you know, there's a lot of conceptions about sustainable things and sustainable practices and living very hippie for one thing, right? You know, you think of people that are like, oh, they're living their low waste or zero waste lifestyle and they're doing, you know, all these sort of things, like they're just so far out of, like, you know, I can't do that in my normal life. Like, that's so far from me. I can't go live off the grid and, you know, compost my leftovers and feed it to my pigs. Like, people think of it as this really far-fetched idea of you have to do everything at once in this really far, you know, zero waste, low waste sort of sustainable lifestyle. But it's really not that. You can do that if you want, but, you know, there's so many other ways to incorporate it in a very approachable way into what you're doing and your business practices and all these things. So I think a lot of times people think of it as being very far-fetched and unattainable or something along those lines, but it really isn't. So we're not all hippies if we're sustainable, you know. We're just thoughtful, I like to think.
Yeah, and it's actually a lot easier to kind of reach sustainability practices than what we might realize. I remember, when I did my first internship in California, it was my first time being on the West Coast, and a lot of things on the West Coast, from my experience, just in my, short amount of time being there, it's a little bit more like eco-friendly than what I've seen growing up in Georgia, where I had never seen a compost bin before, and I was so confused. I was like, why are all these tr what are all these trash cans? And someone had to explain to me, like, no, this is compost. Like there, I knew about recycling, but the composting aspect of it was new to me, and I was like, oh, well, this isn't too crazy, and we're a lot closer to this idea this idea of sustainability than I thought it was the far-fetched thing, but it really doesn't have to be like that. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's good to clear that up for those who are listening. And yeah, we might be more sustainable than we think. So yeah,
Yeah, exactly.
how did you get interested in food and sustainability in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were a lot of things that kind of led up to me having that first interest in kind of maybe pursuing something in the food and sustainability world a little bit more seriously. But I think the core experience that I had that kind of prepared me to then take my career in this direction was actually in college. So I went to UGA. And while I was there, I got involved in a program called Impact. It's Impact Service Breaks. And it's essentially a spring break and winter break, like alternative breaks programs. So instead of going on, a spring break trip to the beach, you go on one of these trips, which are sort of social justice oriented, service oriented trips. And so we had these trips across the country on so many different topics. And I was a trip leader for 3 years, and I did one trip to New Orleans for environmental awareness. I did a trip to Indianapolis for public health. And then I led a trip to Durham my final year for food justice. And I remember leading this trip and preparing for this trip, and just something struck a chord in me. And it was like I connected to this thing that I've been looking for so long. I'd been looking for something to feel so passionate about that I wanted to do, and I hadn't quite found that fit. And I remember watching these documentaries and doing all this research beforehand and just being, my eyes were just open to this food and sustainability and all of the issues that there are in our food system. I mean, from food waste and food deserts and lack of access to healthy and nutritious food. And, there's so many different levels to food injustice, I guess, in the system. And it was something that really opened my eyes. And at the time, I actually had another job already lined up after graduation. And so I just kind of filed it away, and I was like, I'll get back to this, like I'll think about this later. And it was something that really stuck with me. And when I went to my job, it was all I could think about. And I wasn't happy in my role. And I kept thinking, I was like, gosh, like maybe I should do something related to that. And I started to think about it more. And yeah, and it was just something that kind of struck a chord unlike anything else had. And it felt like a good pairing of my passion for wanting to be connected to like a bigger purpose, in this case being sustainability, and finding a role that could sort of pair my skill set, I guess, that I had developed with that passion. So I started looking into jobs for that, and that was kind of, but that's kind of what started it all, I guess, was that Impact program at UGA.
Yeah, the exposure to all these like different things, especially in college, is something that really kind of fuels a lot of career direction. I think that's something that I've experienced as well, which is part of how I even ended up doing this podcast, where I did a spring break alternative trip as well when I was
Okay.
a yeah when I was a I think like a junior in college. I did a trip focused on software engineering and career development, and I got to see how much like career stuff I was missing out on, and just other people as well. I realized that there was a big issue in terms of people being, exposed to, in my case, software engineering, and knowing like, hey, these are all the things you can do in software engineering. And, me going through that program, I was like, wow, I learned a lot. And, without this program, I might have, missed out on something. And I realized, if other people weren't able to go on this trip, so there's, an opportunity for me to, be an advocate and just kind of like use my voice to share different opportunities and resources, which is pretty much what I'm trying to do now with the podcast, where, I think awareness is a really big aspect of just, the career development, and kind of, yeah, figuring out the direction that you want to go in, because you can't really, it's hard to pinpoint that thing when you know something's out there, but you just don't know how to articulate it or like what to Google search until you find it. And so I think that's really cool that we both were able to kind of go on these trips and have a little bit of like self-discovery to realize somewhat of a like a higher purpose and passion that we have.
No, 100%. I relate to that so strongly. And I always think about this phrase. I don't know who said it, but you don't know what you don't know. And it's like until you get exposure to things or try things or research things and do things maybe outside of your comfort zone, that's where you're going to learn the most or be exposed to things that you didn't even know you were going to be interested in the first place, you know? And then next thing you know, you're creating a podcast about it or you're
Yeah.
quitting your job to go do something different, whatever it may be. But it's crazy how many things out there we don't know that we don't know. And for us, this might be that one thing that we kind of discovered, but what's next? And it's a pretty exciting thing.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Now I want to go back a little bit because you had mentioned that you had a job coming out of college, but you could only think about the food and sustainability experience. And I know that at one point you had a marketing role in the CPG space, and you left that to kind of take some time to, go to Chile and maybe even explore some of the food and sustainability realm over in Chile. So can you talk about what that experience was like, where you had to maybe, shift out of what you were doing to kind of go for what you think is your passion?
Yeah, it's funny to look back on it now and just remember the emotions that I was feeling when I was making that decision. I'm a pretty risk adverse person, I would say. And so, telling my friends and family that I was going to quit my, job in the big city that was paying me well and was, a well-known company to go farm in Chile for an undecided amount of time was a pretty scary idea to me. But yeah, when I was at my job, I felt pretty disconnected to the work that I was doing and to the people that I was working with. I mean, they were very nice people and I made great friends, but there was just this disconnect to what I valued in a workplace and in the work that I was doing and what everyone else seemed to value. And so I told myself I'm going to do a year here. I want to be able to say that I saw this through, I got the experience I need from here, but if I need to pivot, I'm going to pivot. And so I decided to pursue something in the direction of food and sustainability, but I still didn't know what I wanted that to be even. And so when I was thinking about it, I was like, you know what? Maybe instead of just moving from one job that I don't like to potentially another one that I don't like, just to leave that job after a year, I didn't want to do this repetitive thing. And so I wanted to take time to really, I guess, do the kind of soul searching in a way and figure out if this was really a direction I wanted to go. And so I decided to do this program called Woofing, which is essentially it's a pretty well-known program, I think, but it's this program that matches volunteers with farms or sustainable projects around the world. They're in many countries. I won't name the number because I'm not sure, but many. And I started looking into that and I was like, maybe this is a good idea to kind of clear my head, get, at the root of the food system, right? And like actually learn about, sustainable agriculture and things that I'm interested in, but I really don't have experience with, and take that time to kind of read and research and think about what I would want to do next with that. And so that's what I did. So I stayed at my job for a year, I quit, and a month later I was in Chile. I thought I was only going to be there for 3 months. I told everyone, I was like, oh yeah, I'll be back before Christmas. Like, see you soon. And then I ended up staying for about 6 months. And it was a phenomenal experience. I would recommend it to anybody, even if you're not trying to pivot into the food and sustainability world. It's a really great way to travel and meet people and just experience a different life than you have anywhere else. And you can do it in the US, you can do it abroad. But while I was there, I got to work on 6 different farms and live with, yeah,
Wow.
it was amazing. And I also like the maximum exposure I'd ever had to farming or gardening before that was day volunteer things in college or in high school. You know, I really like, yeah. I was telling people, I was like, I'm gonna go change the food system, but I have no experience and barely any knowledge, but let's do it. So it was a great first step for me to really kind of get my hands dirty and learn about it. And, you know, I came back in March of 2020, which is when we know that the world imploded a little bit. I came back like 3 days before everything locked down, went into shutdown. And, you know, I came back definitely feeling like I made the right decision, but I still didn't have clarity. I was like, okay, I know food sustainability, like, yes, that's my passion. That's what I'm interested in. But what do I do within that? It's still this huge industry. And there's so many things to do within that. And now I'm walking into, you know, a global pandemic and, you know, crisis when it comes to unemployment and all these things. So it was definitely a weird experience to come back to when I think I'd expected that by the time I was done, I was like, I'm going to come back. I'm going to instantly find my new dream job. And obviously that's not exactly what happened. So it was an interesting experience to come back at the time I did and kind of end that experience in that way.
Yeah. And I want to go into the COVID experience a little bit more, but before I do that, I just wanted to back up to what that actual experience looked like in Chile, because I never got to study abroad when I was in college or work abroad. So I'm curious of, you know, what that experience was like being in another country, maybe speaking another language, doing some work that you're trying to, you know, just explore and see if you even like it. Like, what was that like?
I was very lucky in my experience, for sure. So when I decided to go abroad, I knew I wanted to, because like I said, they had opportunities in many countries, and I narrowed it down to Chile because I knew I wanted to go somewhere where I could speak Spanish, because I had studied it in high school, a little bit in college, but, you know, never used it, forgot a lot of it. And so I wanted to put that to use. And I told myself, I was like, I'm going to come back fluent, which was also just setting the bar way too high. But I decided on just like filtering by that. I decided I want to go somewhere I hadn't been before and somewhere that spoke Spanish. That's kind of how I landed in Chile. And, you know, my experience with traveling and being abroad was not too bad. I've grown up traveling. I grew up with a parent that worked in the airline industry, so we were able to travel a good bit growing up. And so, you know, being somewhere new and abroad and even alone wasn't too much of a shock for me, which I think was pretty lucky, because I knew I was committing to a pretty long period of time with a lot of unknowns. Mm. So I think having that in my back pocket as my experience was really, really helpful. But yeah, I mean, when I first got there, you know, it still doesn't solve all your problems. I remember my first day was really hard and I felt like I couldn't speak to anybody, you know, and I didn't know this new city. And I remember having a breakdown to one of my friends that night, because I was like, I've been thinking about this for 6 months now, and it's actually here. And it's not like I romanticized it in my head. You know, it's not me frolicking in the city, meeting people instantly. It was me eating a kiwi for dinner in my hostel bed alone. You know, it was a hard experience. And I think that's a really powerful part of traveling, though, is like, you're gonna have those hard moments, but can you go to the next day and try again, or try something new? And can you do it again the day after that and keep kind of pushing your boundaries? And I think that was something I really needed as someone, like I said, that's pretty risk adverse and had gotten pretty comfortable in a lot of ways. I think that was like a shock for me, but I'm glad that it happened really early on too, so I could kind of get past that pretty quickly. But yeah, and then once I was there, like I said, I went to 6 different farms. The first one I was at was the most magical place I've ever been, and it'll always have a very special place in my heart. It's a town called Pucón. And it's sort of in, Chile is a very, very long country. It's somewhere in the middle, in like the lakes region is what they call it. And I lived in a adobe house so it's made from mud and straw. And I lived in that on this small farm that was run by a Chilean woman and actually an American woman. And while I was there for 2 months, and I got to live with a lot of other volunteers from different places, from other places in the US, Austria, Brazil, all over. And yeah, and that was kind of where I got, you know, I think the most, I guess it was the beginning of my learnings when it came to like farming and gardening. I mean, I really knew nothing. I think I when I went into it, I thought I knew a lot. And then I realized, oh wait, I barely know what it means to harvest something. So that was kind of like the first 2 months were really a big learning curve for me. And then after that, I just decided I wanted to keep seeing the country and keep meeting different people in different regions of the country. And so that's kind of how I chose where I went from there. And yeah, I don't know. I just met some really incredible people, and it was interesting to learn about how their food system works in Chile. And it's, you know, it's different than how things are run in the US. And yeah, it was really beneficial for me, I think, to see things at the farm level. And, you know, if you're going to work in the food system, sometimes you may be really high up at the retailer level or whatever, and you can't forget that it all comes from the farms, right? And it all comes from that. And so if you want to change the whole system, you kind of have to understand it from bottom to top. And so I think that was a really beneficial way for me to understand it from, you know, the core, the root, the source, and then kind of figure out where I would want to go from there and what part of the supply chain or food system would I, you know, want to work in the most.
Wow, that's I love that. I'm getting like undercover boss vibes where you have to know like all of the levels so you can know exactly how to change the whole system. And even like if you go all the way down to the farms, you're probably getting some really great like, you know, like fundamentals. And I think that's really cool. There are a couple of things that you said I wanted to point out. So basically it seems like, well, you know, your experience with Chile was a great experience for your growth and just challenging how you grow, because a lot of times when we're in our comfort zones, that's where we're not really growing. And it's only when we really leave those comfort zones where we start to grow and really understand ourselves and what we're, I guess, doing. And to your point about being, you know, like risk averse, but also thinking kind of like thinking big, where you're like, oh, I'm just going to go and change the food and sustainability industry. I think that's actually a good mindset to have. I think there's a quote, I think Steve Jobs might have said it, where like those who think they're crazy enough to change the world are the ones who end up doing it. It's something like that. I might have butchered the quote, but it's something along those lines. So I think the fact that you have that mindset, I think you're probably just one step away from changing the game and being on all of the news outlets. And then I'll be like, see, I interviewed her first.
Amazing. I'm trying to tell you. It all comes back to this. Yeah, here's hoping. I'm going to hold you to that, Clayton, honestly.
Yeah, I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see how else your food and sustainability journey just kind of progresses. Just because this is very new to me. I don't know anything about this, so I'm learning as I watch you from the sidelines. And so, yeah, this is pretty cool to just to be a part of the journey and just watch it. And so, another thing that I've seen in terms of food and sustainability is the idea that food waste is related to climate change. Do you have any thoughts or opinions about that?
Oh, do I ever? Yeah. So my role right now, and we can get into that in a bit, I'm sure, but is directly related to that. So food waste, what's really interesting about it is, so there's all these statistics about kind of where food waste is at and how much food is wasted, right? So in the US right now, 40% of all food produced goes to waste, which is a crazy number. And that number is across the supply chain. So that's inclusive of household waste, retail waste, farm level post-harvest waste. It's inclusive of everything, but 40%. And globally, that's somewhere around one third of all food produced. And these are just such staggering numbers when you think about the numbers related to hunger, right? And how many people don't have access to healthy and nutritious foods and that are calorie deficient. And you see all this food that's going to waste and you're like, there's a disconnect there, right? So, you know, the problem of hunger isn't a production issue. It's not that we're not growing enough food. It's a distribution issue. And it's poor management of surplus foods or ugly fruits and vegetables or byproducts and all these things that are really delicious and nutritious and deserve to be on someone's plate and table, but instead they're going to the landfill. And when it comes to related to climate change, so when you put these foods into landfills, they're releasing, you know, all these bad gases that are then going to, you know, straight into the ozone and impacting climate change. And when you look at, there's an organization called Project Drawdown. It's a leading research organization when it comes to climate change solutions. And every year they release a report that outlines and ranks different solutions to climate change. So this is including, you know, solar energy, plant-based diets, regenerative agriculture, all these things. And last year, they ranked reducing food waste as the number one solution to climate change.
Wow.
Which is crazy, you know? And what's interesting is that people don't think about food waste. They think about Teslas and electric cars. They think about solar energy. They think about eating impossible burgers, you know? And they're like, wow, these are the hot topics. This is what everyone's saying is going to, you know, prevent climate change. But really, when you look at the numbers and the data, it's food waste. It's reducing food waste. And what we talk about where I work a lot is that, you know, why is there this disconnect? Why aren't people, you know, talking about reducing food waste as the number one solution? And you think about it, you can buy into these other things. You can buy a solar panel for your house or your business. You can buy a Tesla, maybe, or get on the waiting list for a Tesla.
Yeah, same.
You know, you can buy an impossible meat at the grocery store now, or at McDonald's even. And you don't really think of buying food waste, right? And there's, you know, what is the consumer solution or opportunity there? And that's kind of where what we talk about a lot is upcycled food. And upcycled food gives consumers the opportunity to buy into food waste, and by purchasing products that are actively removing food waste from landfills and from going to landfills. And it gives consumers the opportunity to buy into that, which is really super innovative and interesting, but at the same time, kind of based on something we all know, which is don't waste your food, eat everything on your plate. You know, it's not a new concept, but it's kind of branded for the modern consumer, I guess.
So when you talk about the idea of, I guess, buying into wasted foods, do you mean like people could actually, I guess, go and buy like a banana peel, like a used banana peel, like that type of thing?
I would never go ask someone to go buy a used banana peel.
Visualize what you mean.
Yeah. So what I mean is, you know, it's exactly that, right? When I say you're buying food waste, you're like, you want me to go buy the scraps and the things in the dumpster, right? And it's not that. So what upcycled foods are, or upcycled food products, they are essentially products made from upcycled ingredients and upcycled food ingredients that would have otherwise gone to waste. So for example, think of brewing beer. Whenever you brew beer, there is a byproduct called spent grain, and it's delicious, it's nutritious, it's edible, but nobody really thinks about eating it or turning it into things, right? You maybe give it to the pigs, or it goes to the landfill. And what people are starting to recognize is that there's these delicious byproducts such as spent grain or ugly fruits and vegetables that, you know, retailers and grocery stores are turning away and throwing in the landfill, things like that, or even surplus produce or surplus bread that's not getting sold or eaten. All sorts of things like this have value and can be turned into new products. So what upcycle products are, they're taking these surpluses, these ugly fruits and vegetables, these byproducts, and turning them into new products. So for example, with spent grain, turning that into granola bars, into barley milk, which is, you know, an alternative dairy milk solution, different flours, or taking ugly vegetables that are, you know, don't meet cosmetic standards for retailers, and turning that into delicious chips or juices and all sorts of things. So it's just finding new uses for things like byproducts and surplus that were going to go to waste and had no need to, right? So why don't you take those and turn them into a delicious new product that people can eat, and you're actively diverting that waste from the landfill and therefore reducing climate change in the end, right? So it's not buying the banana peel. It's it's taking those and finding new innovative and creative uses for them, essentially. And there's people much smarter than me that are doing this and coming up with these great ideas. But there's, I mean, there's hundreds of these products out there and people doing such creative, innovative things that I never would have even thought of. But yeah, it's essentially just finding new ways to elevate food to its highest and best use.
Wow, that's so cool. Like, the nerd in me is just like, I want to like dig in like more and more, but I'll probably have to do that in my own time, because this is like really cool. I had no idea this concept even existed with upcycled foods, or the idea that byproducts could be used. I guess I would have always assumed that a byproduct would have been waste, but
yeah,
maybe not.
I mean, that's the whole thing, right? It's kind of changing the perception of, you know, what we always say is like making the wasters of today the suppliers of tomorrow. You know, these people that are creating these waste streams in their food manufacturing facilities, they don't necessarily have to be wasted. You know, why couldn't that go into a new product? What opportunity is really there? And we just kind of have to challenge what we define as waste, because I think we're so quick to judge certain products or, you know, fruits that have a dent in them and say, oh, that's not good, that's not edible. But really it is, and there's got to be another way to use it. And what's interesting too is with upcycled foods, they're not just turning these ingredients or these, you know, upcycled foods into other foods. People are using them for cosmetics. People are using them for household products, for pet food. I mean, truly the applications for upcycled food ingredients are endless. And every day I'm introduced to something new that just blows my mind. Yeah, it's really interesting. And you're right. People aren't really aware of what it is, because, you know, it's a familiar concept, right? You don't want to waste anything. Your mom, your grandma, everyone tells you, like, don't waste that, like, use that. And it's using that philosophy and applying it to these different things that I was talking about, you know, and making them into new products and saving the day.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing. I'm probably gonna think of you now every time I eat my food and I have that vegetable that I don't want to eat. I'm like, oh, no, I have to eat it so I can save the planet.
Like, exactly, that's me. Exactly it.
Nice. So I wanna jump back to how you ended up at Upcycled, you know, during this pandemic, because yeah, like, you came back like right when things were shutting down. And everything was just kind of going crazy. People's offers were getting rescinded and all kinds of career stuff was just haywire. So like, what did that kind of look like for you? And how did you go about the process of applying and networking and ultimately getting your job?
Yeah, I mean, so when I got back, like I said, it was in March, which was bad timing. But, you know, at the time, I think I was still pretty naive about what was going to happen in the coming months, right? I did not know, nor did anybody really know what it was going to be, or we were ignoring, you know, what professionals were telling.
Yeah.
But so when I first got back, I just started looking, right? I hadn't really done any job searching while I was abroad still. I was kind of saving that for when I got back. And so I got back and I mean, I was really just randomly searching things. I think I started off by, you know, naming companies and brands that I knew and looked up to, right? And then you kind of see that, oh, they're not hiring. And then you're like, okay, well, where do I look now? And and it is really hard. And I, you know, I think I had started to discover some upcycled companies. And without knowing they were upcycled, because I also back in March did not know what upcycled foods were. And, you know, I started finding these companies that seemed really interesting. And I started reading about what they were doing, which was taking these waste streams and turning them into cool new products. And I started seeing this logo on a lot of these websites that said Upcycled Food Association. And I didn't really think much of it. And I think I might've clicked on it and followed them on LinkedIn and called it a day, you know. And it kept coming up through my search just when I was looking at other companies. And at some point I finally looked at their LinkedIn page and I realized that I went to UGA, and you know, on LinkedIn when it says like an alumni works here,
yep,
and it said one alumni works here. And so I clicked on it, and the COO, it was a team of two at the time, the CEO and the COO, and the COO was an alumni of UGA. And so I reached out to him on LinkedIn, and I just, nothing about wanting a job, there was no job posting, but I just reached out to him, and I asked him if he had tips for someone that wanted to go into this industry and that wanted to learn more about food waste. And I said, are there books you would recommend reading, articles, videos, tell me everything you know. And he got back to me, was really nice, and he recommended a couple of websites that I should look at and articles, and I did it, and that was it. And then a couple of weeks later, I saw that they had actually posted a job for an internship, and so I ended up applying, because at that point this was in June, and at that point I still hadn't found anything, had gotten lots of rejection emails, and really felt pretty stuck. And I recognized, I was like, okay, maybe I can't find a full-time thing right now, but what can I do to get my foot in the door, I just need to start somewhere. I don't know how to get into this industry. What do I do? And so I was like, okay, an internship is perfect. Like, that's exactly what I need, foot in the door, learn something from people that have been doing this for a while. And so I applied for the internship and I got it, very luckily. And so I started that in June. And so that was kind of my first exposure to really learning what upcycled food is. It's funny that I was giving the spiel now, because I just am remembering how little I knew about it going into it. So it is nice to reflect on how much you can learn in a short period of time. But yeah, and so I started the internship, and I was mostly managing things with marketing and related to membership and whatnot. And then come October, I ended up getting a full-time offer. So I am now in the role that I am in. But it was, just in general, when it comes to the job search, because I think I just, in my explanation, made it seem like it was very streamlined, but I really felt very all over the place and scatterbrained. And, you know, it's hard to apply to 50 to 100 jobs and just get so many rejections, right? And I am far from the only one that was experiencing that, right? And you start questioning yourself and your abilities and your experience. And, you know, it was hard because I had just come back from this amazing trip, and I felt like that was going to solve all my problems. And I came back and I was like, wow, should I not have done that? You know, should I have stayed at my other job? Should I, you know, would that have prevented all of this uncertainty and frustration? And so I was definitely going through a lot of those thoughts and questioning what I wanted to do and how to get there. And I would say the best thing that I got out of that experience, because even during my internship, I wasn't guaranteed a full-time job, so I was still kind of looking for other things outside of that. And I think the best thing is, especially now, strangers are very talking to you and connecting with you and sharing their experiences. And I connected with some of the most incredible people that, I mean, truly, they were complete strangers to me, like barely even had a connection on LinkedIn. Or if I did, it was someone I didn't even really know. And next thing I know, they're sending me five different, you know, job opportunities that they saw on their LinkedIn. And these people don't even know me, you know, they met me for 20 minutes on a phone call, and next thing I know, they've kind of become my biggest cheerleaders. And so I think one thing that really great that came out of this is just really great connections with people that were strangers to me, that I was just like, that seems interesting what they're doing, like, let me pick their brain.
Yep.
And I got to connect with some really amazing people that I think supported me a lot into, honestly, just getting my mindset back right. I think I had kind of spiraled a little bit in my own head, and so having some other people to tell me about how they went through the same thing 10 years ago, or they, you know someone else that does this and I should connect with them, like, people are willing to help you and people are very kind. And I think that was a really good learning during the process, as frustrating as it was. That was kind of a silver lining of it all.
Yeah, I think man, I feel like I wasn't like looking for a job recently, but in based on previous job searches that I've, you know, done up to this point, I can resonate with a lot of things that you said, especially with connecting people on LinkedIn and just even just talking about things that you're going through, expressing maybe even the frustrations that you're feeling, maybe feeling like an imposter, quote unquote. And hearing that other people like went through the same thing is like everyone feels the same thing. It's like, oh, it's not just me. Like I'm not, you know, some one-off case. And so I think it's really good, if, especially if you're, you know, listening and looking for a job, to, you know, connect with people on LinkedIn. Something that I did while I was in college, something that you just mentioned that you did, was, you know, just kind of like connect with strangers. You know, it just blew my mind how open just complete strangers are to helping you with your career development or just personal development or just even like being a good friend on LinkedIn. It's really crazy, and you just have to, you know, just be, you know, clear with what you're going to be asking for, and just show that, hey, I looked at your profile and I saw that you did this. We have this interest in common, and then all of a sudden you have like a call with someone, and then maybe you even have like a recurring meeting with them. And like you said, it's something that happened in my experience as well, is when I started doing that, I started getting people were offering to, you know, mock interview me or saying, hey, I could refer you to this to my company if you're still looking. And this is something that in season one we spoke with Sierra Lawrence, and she also said the same thing about her journey with getting hired during COVID, where basically like leveraging the network was a part, not that it wasn't, you know, like the one solution, not to, you know, minimize the job search, because that's a monster, but it was a very helpful step. And sometimes, you know, when you're doing this networking, even if you're not looking for a job, that's when you actually get the job. It's like before you actually need it sometimes. So you might have to do some networking now before you need something, and then later on, like those like seeds that you sow will kind of they'll come back later.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's so funny because I hate the word networking. I hate when I hear it. It stresses people out, and it feels a lot of times people talk about how it feels so forced and fake, or it feels, disingenuous, and it's uncomfortable sometimes to be like, I'm gonna reach out to this random person that doesn't know me. They'll never respond, and networking as a concept is something that, people talk about all the time, and they kind of amp it up to be this sort of scary thing. But I think if you do it right, it really does just change the game. Like you were just saying, and do it before you even need it, just connect with people that seem interesting to you. I think that's when it comes down to it. Someone gave me the advice because I was complaining about the idea of networking, and I was like, I don't know, like, is it helpful? Do people want to talk to me? And what he told me, he was like, you just have to be genuine with them. I was like, people want to talk about themselves and share their stories and help other people, but you can't come at it with like a salesy pitch, right? You really have to want to connect with this person, and it can be for whatever reason. I mean, one of the best connections I had was, so I really love fermentation, and I love kombucha, and I started kombucha. Whole nother story, a whole nother podcast topic, but I reached out to this woman who was director of sales essentially at a kombucha company. And I was like, I literally in my message to her, I was like, I'm a kombucha nerd. Like, I would love to learn more about your experience. And she was one of the best connections I got. And it wasn't because I was saying, hello, so and so, I'm looking for a job at your company. Can you talk to me about your experience? Like, I was just being real and genuine with them, and I think that's what makes the difference too. So I think, figure out what makes you unique and stand out, but also connect with people that just seem interesting to you. And I think, not going into it with the end goal of they will find me a job, because then you will end up disappointed. It won't always happen, but I think going into it just to connect with people really does change the game, and they can tell the difference too, if you're being genuine or if you're pushing for sort of an ulterior motive sort of thing. So that would be my tip too to anybody out there that's looking to network and scared to do it, but do it, be true to yourself during it too.
Yeah, and I just want to bounce off of that. I think what you just did was really important, where you really distinguish the difference between, I guess, like networking at its like purest form, where you're just connecting with people, versus relationship building, where you are connecting with people, being authentic, you know, sharing your interests. Like you said, you were like, hey, I want to know about, different books that I could read about this topic. I just want to learn about things. And there's no like agenda necessarily. And I think when you get to that point where you're more so building relationships instead of maybe just connecting, then that's when you start to really gain those important, people in your lives. And as a byproduct of this relationship building, you might start to get things that you weren't expecting, like jobs or extra opportunities. And so I just think that's, really a really cool thing. And I think you did a really great job of just showing that, Michelle. So
Thank
I just
you.
wanted to highlight that.
And also something I would say with that is it doesn't always have to just be LinkedIn too. I know a friend of mine actually introduced me to this platform, and I'm sure there's others like it. It's called Lunch Club. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I have
It
not.
yeah, it's lunchclub.io, I think.
Oh, techie.
Maybe fact check me on that, but essentially it's this platform that different professionals across so many different industries, yada yada, you sign up and they match you with someone. You choose the days that you're free. So you'd say, oh, I'd like to meet with three people this week. I'm free on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And they pair you with someone. It could be based on your interest. You can input kind of what your industry is and your expertise. And they just randomly match you with someone and you just chat with them. And it honestly was really nice because there was definitely no agenda there, whereas if I'm reaching out to someone on LinkedIn that, I've clearly found them for a reason, I have a connection with them, they work at a company I want, there's something that's drawn me to them. Whereas with this, it was really just random conversations with people, and it felt if at first it was a little bit odd because you're like, who are you? Why were we paired? But once you got going, like I got these really great connections and just conversations with these people. And so I would just say outside of LinkedIn, there's other ways to connect with people too, and that was a really good resource for me. So I'd recommend that Lunch
For
Club.
sure, for sure. Yeah, I'll definitely take a look at that, and I'll drop the link in the episode notes so anyone can check that out. Cool. So as we wrap up, if someone's listening to this and they want to learn more about, what you do at Upcycled, or just learn more about, food sustainability, where could they get this information?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely recommend checking out our website at upcycledfood.org. And that's a great resource just to learn more about the work that we're doing. And we're essentially a network of businesses and companies and individuals that are dedicated to the upcycled food movement. And right now we're about 130 strong. So even on our website, you can just look at all of our really, really amazing members that are upcycling food in so many different ways and just explore them and get familiar with these cool products. See if any of them are carried in stores near you. And that way you can even try it out yourself and know that you're not just eating the banana peel that Clayton was talking about earlier. It's better than the banana peel. Yeah, that's a really great resource. And then also ReFed is a really great resource. I believe it's refed.org, but they are really just such leaders in the food waste reduction world and movement, and they have incredible resources. If you want to learn more, I would definitely dive into the work that they've done. They have a really incredible report that they've written that goes into a lot of detail about this. So if you're interested in that, that's a really great resource as well. I also was doing a lot of research beforehand, and I went to Slow Food. You can just Google Slow Food. There's Slow Food USA, Slow Food International. They've got a lot of great resources about just the global food system as a whole. So those are a couple things that I would recommend looking into.
All right, for sure. Yeah, I'll also grab those links and drop them in the episode notes so you all can click through them if you're listening. So before we finish up, do you have any final words or of advice or any quotes you want to drop for our listeners to sign us off?
Yeah, I can do that. So I recently got this book called Homebody by Rupi Kaur, who some of you may be familiar with. She's an incredible poet and writer, and she recently released this book. And I was reading through it, and she has this whole section about rest, and a lot of it talks about kind of productivity and progress and self-improvement. And she has this quote in here that really resonated with me when it just comes back to my experience in figuring out what was the best next step for me, and taking leaps of faith and doing things to get me where I am. So the quote is, if you tried and didn't end up where you wanted to go, that's still progress. And so I just want to share that as a reminder to people that even if you feel like you aren't necessarily doing the exact thing that you want to do, or if you had to compromise to, you know, get yourself through this pandemic in some way and take a job maybe that wasn't ideal for you, you're still making steps forward. And, you know, like we were saying earlier, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know who you'll meet tomorrow or what you'll see next week that can kind of change your trajectory. So I think just knowing that you're making progress and making sure that, you know, you don't discount the baby steps that'll get you to your grand finale.
I love that. I think that's so beautiful. What a pleasant way to end an episode with some great words of affirmation and
encouragement. On a high note, yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Rochelle, for spending time with us on Connecting with Careers.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
This week, the Apple Podcast shout-out goes to Robin Spottas. They said, very informative. This podcast is a great listen for anyone planning out their career, especially newer college grads and those who are anxious about their careers. Each episode gives good insight on how to foster success and does so in a comfortable and personal way. I'm really glad, Robin, that you feel comfortable and a personal connection with my show. I hope that you continue listening because we have a lot more of that great content for you. All right, everyone, that wraps up this episode of Connecting with Careers by Pipeline Career Services. The Pipeline community is always looking for more people to welcome, so if you want to stay up to date with our career building content, you can find a link to our social media in the episode description. New episodes will be released every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, and if you have access to an Apple device, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review. It'll help us get great guests and connect more people. Plus, if you leave a review, you just might get a shout out on the show. Check the show notes for a link so you can participate. And don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss out on our next episode where we connect you with careers.